Prince Bleagel by Andrew Lang, Chapter 3. About the Fire Drake. Of all the people who did not like Bleagel, his own dear papa, King Grognio, disliked him most. For the king knew he was not clever himself. When he was in the counting house, counting out his money, and when he happened to say, 16 shillings and 14 and 2 pence are 3 pounds 15, it made him wild to hear Bleagel whisper, 1 pound 10 and 2 pence, which of course it is. And the king was afraid that Bleagel would conspire and get made him king himself, which was the last thing Bleagel really wanted. He much preferred to idle about and know everything without seeming to take any trouble. Well, the king thought and thought. How was he to get Bleagel out of the way and make Enrico or Alfonso his successor? He read his books about it, and all the books showed that if a king sent his 3 sons to do anything, it was always the youngest who did it and got the crown. And he wished he had the chance. Well, it arrived at last. There was a very hot summer. It began to be hot in March. All the rivers were dried up, the grass did not grow, the corn did not grow. The thermometers exploded with heat. The barometers stood at set fair. The people were much distressed and came and broke the palace windows, as they usually do when things go wrong in Pantuflia. The king consulted the learned men about the court, who told him that probably a fire drake was in the neighborhood. Now, the fire drake is a beast or bird about the bigness of an elephant. Its body is made of iron, and it is always red hot. A more terrible and cruel beast cannot be imagined, for if you go near it, you are at once broiled by the fire drake. But the king was not ill-pleased, for, thought he, of course my 3 sons must go for the brute, the eldest first, and as usual it will kill the first 2 and be beaten by the youngest. It is a little hard on Enrico, poor boy, but anything to get rid of that Bleagel. Then the king went to Bleagel and said that his country was in danger, and that he was determined to leave the crown to whichever of them would bring him the horns, for it has horns, and the tail of the fire drake. "It is an awkward brute to tackle," the king said, "but you are the oldest, my lad. Go where glory awaits you, put on your armor, and be off with you." This the king said, hoping that either the fire drake would roast Prince Bleagel alive, which he could easily do, as I have said, for he is all over as hot as a red-hot poker, or that, if the prince succeeded, at least his country would be freed from the monster. But the prince, who was lying on the sofa doing sums and compound division for fun, said in the politest way, "Thanks to the education your majesty has given me, I have learned that the fire drake, like the siren, the fairy, and so forth, is a fabulous animal which does not exist. But even granting, for the sake of argument, that there is a fire drake, your majesty is well aware that there is no kind of use in sending me. It is always the eldest son who goes out first and comes to grief on these occasions, and it is always the 3rd son that succeeds. Send Alfonso," this was the youngest brother, "and he will do the trick at once. At least, if he fails, it will be most unusual, and Enrico can try his luck." Then he went back to his arithmetic and his slate, and the king had to send for Prince Alfonso and Prince Enrico. They both came in very warm, for they had been whipping tops, and the day was unusually hot. "Look here," said the king, "just you 2 younger ones look at Bleagel. You see how hot it is, and how coolly he takes it, and the country suffering, and all on account of a fire drake, you know, which has apparently built his nest not far off. Well, I have asked that lout of a brother of yours to kill it, and he says that he does not believe in fire drakes," interrupted Bleagel. "The weather's warm enough without going out hunting." "Not believe in fire drakes?" cried Alfonso. "I wonder what you do believe in. Just let me get at that creature," for he was as brave as a lion. "Hi, page, my chain armor, helmet, lance, and buckler. Ah, Melinda, ah, Melinda," which was his war cry. The page ran to get the armor, but it was so uncommonly hot that he dropped it and put his fingers in his mouth, crying. "You had better put on flannels, Alfonso, for this kind of work," said Bleagel. "And if I were you, I'd take a light garden engine full of water to squirt at the enemy." "Happy thought," said Alfonso. "I will." And off he went, kissed his dear Melinda, bade her keep a lot of dances for him, There was to be a dance when he had killed the Fire Drake, and then he rushed to the field, but he never came back any more. Everyone wept bitterly, everyone but Prince Brijo, for he thought it was a practical joke and said that Alfonso would take the opportunity to start off on his travels and see the world. "There is some dreadful mistake, sir," said Brijo to the king. "You know as well as I do that the youngest son has always succeeded up to now, but I entertain great hopes of Enrico." And he grinned, for he fancied it was all nonsense, and that there was no Fire Drakes. Were no Fire Drakes. Enrico was present when Brijo was consoling the king in this unfeeling way. "Enrico, my boy," said his majesty, "the task awaits you and the honor. When you come back with the horns and tail of the Fire Drake, you shall be crown prince, and Brijo shall be made an usher of the grammar school. It is all he is fit for." Enrico was not quite so confident as Alfonso had been. He insisted on making his will, and he wrote a poem about the pleasures and advantages of dying young. This is part of it. "The violet is a blossom sweet that droops before the day is done, slain by thine overpowering heat, O sun. And die like that sweet purple flower, may roast or boil or broil or bake, if burned by thy terrific power, Fire Drake." This poem comforted Enrico more or less, and he showed it to Brijo. But the prince only laughed and said that the second line of the last verse was not very good, for violets do not roast or boil or broil or bake. Enrico tried to improve it, but he could not. So he read it to his cousin, Lady Catalina, just as it was, and she cried over it, though I don't think she understood it, and Enrico cried a little too. However, next day he started with a spear, a patent refrigerator, and a lot of the bottles people throw at fires to put them out. But he never came back again. After shedding torrents of tears, the king summoned Prince Brijo to his presence. "Dastard," he said, "poltroon, your turn, which should have come first, has arrived at last. You must fetch me the horns and tail of the Fire Drake. Probably you will be grilled, thank goodness, but who will give me back Enrico and Alfonso?" "Indeed, your majesty," said Brijo, "you must permit me to correct your policy. Your only reason for dispatching your sons in pursuit of this dangerous, but I believe fabulous animal, was to ascertain which of us would most worthily succeed to your throne, at the date, long may it be deferred, of your lamented decease. Now, there can be no further question about the matter. I, unworthy as I am, represent the sole hope of the royal family. Therefore, to send me after the Fire Drake were both dangerous and unnecessary." And here's a comment on the word "were." It's the subjective mood. He was a great grammarian. Prince Brijo, that was. And Brijo continued, "Dangerous, because if he treats me as you say he did my brothers, my unhappy brothers, the throne of Pantuflia will want an heir. But if I do come back alive, why, I cannot be more the truer heir than I am at present. Now can I? Ask the Lord Chief Justice if you don't believe me." These arguments were so clearly and undeniably correct that the king, unable to answer them, withdrew into a solitary place where he could express himself with freedom and give rein to his passions.